Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report. Still under lockdown, and what a week it's gonna be. It is sort of the Democratic Convention week, for what it's worth. What's it worth, Francesca? What's it worth?
There's gonna be so much, like... Oh, was that my time? Was that 40 seconds? Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and, like... Gretchen Whitmer's cat is going to wander into the frame, and it's going to be, oh, it's going to be a mess. And honestly,
people's animals instead of them, wouldn't that be so much better if instead of any speakers, just like, please put your animals in your best you costume.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to see, like, I want AOC's dog to make an appearance, Gretchen Whitmer's cat. I want John Kasich to be attacked by a bear. I just want animals in frame, basically, because that's going to be better than the vast majority of the speeches, which are going to be just soul-crushing. There are more Republicans speaking at the Democratic Convention than at the Republican Convention. That's what's going on.
Jeez. Anyway. That's how big the tent is, John. Listen, when you're team life, like team we believe in continuing to try to live in this country and on this planet, it's a big tent. Like, what are you gonna do? It is. You know, part of me is like, I mean, I'm mad. I definitely am mad. I do think there should be an alternative convention without calling it the kids' table. We should have, like, you know, they should have to be, you know, sort of them. Actually, here's the thing: the middle of the road Republicans should have their own Democratic convention where they're like, I don't mind Joe. He doesn't make me scared about people of color taking over. You know, whatever it is.
They are, and it's tonight. but anyway, yeah, you got to give the Dems credit. They decided that they're going to build a big, dumb, awful tent, and by God, they've done it. It's the worst, but it's big. But anyway, so we're going to be doing some live coverage of that later on tonight, Jenk and myself, and then in future days, others are going to be taking over. Look, tune into the coverage, because for at least one moment, it's going to be awesome. Aside from that, I can't say for sure. So we're going to have to see what we get. But we do have a lot that we're going to be getting to through the course of this episode of the Damage Report, including the latest on the possibility of a stimulus deal being passed. What's going on with the post office? Nothing good. Will we have an election? We'll see about that. And the weekend, there was an earthquake, and not the sort that rocks California every couple days. No, this was a polling earthquake. Has something fundamentally changed in this election? We're going to find out together. And then we're going to check in with presidential hands a little bit later on. The Senate adjourned for some time without reaching a deal. So the question is, will there be one? They're not there in D.C., but they could still hypothetically come to some sort of understanding. Well, Trump was asked about what role he could play in making that happen. And here's what he had to say.
After 3 weeks of absolutely no deal, you have been ragging on Democrats constantly. Why not come to the table personally and sit with
them? So I think we've done very well. We've had three phases. We're into phase four. We've gotten everything we wanted. And we've also gotten a great economy. All you have to do is take a look at these charts. Our economy is doing good. But we want different things than them. I want money for the people. They want money to bail out Democrat governors and Democrat mayors. Listen to me. My people are doing very good, and my people call me. They're in the office. They call me. When it's right, nobody knows the deal better than I do. When it's right, I'll meet. But right now, it's not right. They want $1 trillion to bail out badly run states. They're Democrat states. Will something happen? Possibly. But I want to tell you, the country is doing very well right now. We can live very happily with it, without it.
Okay, so lots of issues there. But I mean, the takeaway line from that is we're doing very well. We could live with it or without it. If stimulus happens, it happens. If not, it doesn't. And I think he was very honest about that. The sort of people that he actually represents are weathering this just fine. They're making money hand over fist. And they honestly don't care if a deal ever gets passed, because the part they want, the huge corporate slush fund, that was in the first one. They've got that. That's secured. They're going to be tapping into that for some time. And if, you know, more enhanced unemployment comes, okay, fine, maybe. But that's not what they're actually clamoring for.
No, of course not. I mean, the urgency is gone, right? Like, completely gone. Mnuchin, again, got what he wanted. All of his friends got the bailouts that they wanted. Ruth's Chris has been protected. And now, what's the incentive? It's really just to wield it over Democrats and bask in the misery that you're creating. And it's funny, a week ago, we were talking about executive orders. Notice how almost a week later, Trump is not even talking about those executive orders. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what they are because they don't mean anything. They are completely empty. But he didn't even say things like, okay, student loans are deferred until the end of the year. Continue to be deferred. Oh, thank you, you know. Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't care. Look, and the way he talks about Americans, listen to his like last thing that he said, oh, if there's a good deal, I'm going to come to the table. Like, we at this point are like a condo in on the Upper West Side. Like, it's a fixer-upper, terrible water pressure, you know, and it's like, we're falling apart pretty much on the Upper West Side. Great real estate, we're falling apart, and the president's like, cheaper, and I'll come and sign. Like, when there's less, when we do less for this place, I'll come and sign that deal.
Yeah, and the way that he talked about the deal, my people are doing very good. Yeah, but we don't have a deal. You're saying we don't have a deal. How good are they doing? They've apparently been negotiating for 3 months and we've got nothing. But he knows all the details. I'm sure that he does. And he says, you know, that we're doing fine with the pandemic. We've been through three phases. We're into the fourth. What were those phases? Like, the first one was the devastating initial blow and the lockdowns. I guess the second was where people tried to pretend that there was no pandemic. And then the third was exciting when it hit us again and deaths went up to like 1,500 a day. And now we're into the fourth, which so far looks like 95% of the third. I don't know. Like, the way that he talks about it.
It's the first three combined, John. It's exactly that. We're tired of this. We're completely scared. And there's no end in sight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels so disconnected from the reality of what's happening. It's not necessarily disconnected from how some people think about the pandemic. I think that there have been so many different things happening over the past few months, the objective of which is to get you to stop caring. You know, that's all Fox has been doing now since March 15th, basically, is variations on the strategy of, here's reasons you don't have to worry about this. You don't have to worry about this because it's technically just 5G towers, or you don't have to worry about this because it's anti-constitutional or something. They just go through all these different things. And Trump has, of course, been doing that as well. And honestly, when you go this many months without the Democrats able to accomplish anything to help people out, the assumption from the American people, I think, justifiably becomes, how much could they possibly care about this, that they haven't really done anything in months? Now, yes, if it was totally on them, perhaps they would have, but they still haven't delivered, you know? And they're in that room with Trump's great negotiators. Anyway, the entire thing, incredibly frustrating. Again, he was being very honest at the end. He believes that not only do his donors, the people he cares about, the economic elites, they can live with it or without it, but he also means politically that he really has decided, and we're going to talk about polls later on, he's decided that for his own political prospects, he doesn't need to do any better. For Republicans running for re-election, he doesn't have to do anything better. And we can cruise into the election with over 200,000 people having died and, you know, an eviction crisis that's exploding all around us. And he believes, perhaps rightly, that that's not going to significantly imperil his chances of getting re-elected.
No, he will ride white identity politics and cheat right up until November, and worst comes to worst and he loses, he'll find a way just not to leave office. Mm-hmm. Find a way to say that it was, you know, it was rigged. I mean, this is the whole point. He wins either way with the post office meddling. It's actually kind of brilliant, because if he loses, he can say that there was fraud, right? And look, the post office has been completely destroyed. All of my ballots were in the mail. It's like, you did the destroying.
Yeah.
And if he, you know, and if he wins, then it worked. Then the cheating worked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, The host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Over the weekend, news broke that the president's younger brother had passed away, which is obviously very sad. And, you know, my best wishes go out to every other member of the Trump family other than Donald Trump. It's very sad. You know, losing a family member is terrible. It is weird, though, that he passed away in the middle of a pandemic. And I know a lot of people are thinking this. If it was related to that, I don't think we're ever going to find out. I mean, that would be, you know, tragedy on top of tragedy. I feel like we would never find out. Am I crazy? Is it weird to even speculate about that?
Not at all. That's where most people's minds, I mean, these are the things, like, we are not stupid. It is not conspiracy to connect these dots. If an elderly person or if any person dies under suspicious causes this year, under a pandemic, of course we're going to wonder whether there was some kind of complications with COVID. Man, I stubbed my toe and I'm like, COVID. You're like, anything is COVID.
COVID. So
it's COVID, yes. And if the president's brother, who was 72, I believe, passed away, people are going to wonder. And what's worse, I think, to me, the worst part is he wouldn't have any more remorse. It wouldn't change his opinion about the pandemic or his approach to it or people taking it seriously or children going back to school. It wouldn't change anything. And I think the people surrounding him absolutely know that.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the things that I've been thinking about. Like, we will probably never know. And it's notable that a family member of such a prominent person would pass away and there'd be no information whatsoever. It's totally fine. Like, you can have that be private if you want. But in a pandemic, it is going to lead more people to speculate. And if it was that, even though we'll never find out, Trump would, of course, know. And, you know, he says that he was very close and he feels a lot of, you know, like, he feels terrible, which any other human would. I find it difficult to believe that Trump is affected by anything like that. But if he is as concerned about, you know, the loss as he tweeted about, I think, if it was COVID, shouldn't it change his opinion? And I was going to ask you, do you think that it would? So you believe that wouldn't get through to him?
I mean, it would personally make him wear a mask. But once again, he has to octuple down on his anti-science belief and dog whistle to the most fringiest fringe of the QAnon fringe. He is Q after all, which stands for queef, if I can say that on air. That's what it does stand for. If you guys didn't know, it stands for queef. And I hope John Oliver went into that. Nobody ever acknowledges that, but that's truly what it stands for. The all-powerful Q. And, you know, so he's not going to change his mind. But again, he'll personally, you know, be like, you need to stand 6 feet away from me. I just have to say, the other person's tweet I saw about this was Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that he is trying to run a campaign in, you know, 1986 in the year 2020. And he's trying to have sort of, you know, respect and honor his opponent. A man who actively sought foreign interference into his own personal family, like, ties in order to undermine the election, in order to lie about his campaign and then was impeached over it, who's dragged his entire family through the mud, including the deceased family members. Mm-hmm. Like, do you really have to express your condolences? And I gotta say, like, I don't agree with her politics, but I do agree with the way that I think Kamala Harris is just a little bit over all of that. Just like I think we all are over being like rising above and offering our condolences when the president's brother dies. No, man, you don't need to say anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm you know, I'm bleeding heart. I feel bad when someone dies. But yeah, I can't help but I can't
you still
forget
feel.
That I do. I have some feelings. I can feel a pulsing under the scar tissue. But yeah, I can't forget that, like, in the wake of John Lewis dying, Trump says he's not very impressed with him and stuff like that. Like, it makes, like, when I hear that, I said at the time, I would have cut off the interview by tackling him out of his chair. And so that makes me feel a little bit less empathy for you personally when you go through a tragedy, you monster, a tragedy that, and if it was that, again, as with Herman Cain, would it have happened had Trump taken this seriously from the beginning? We don't know. Anyway, this is all baseless speculation, but I know that a lot of people are thinking these things, so I'm working my way through it as well. A lot of concern about what the post office is doing to our democracy and what Trump and his cronies are doing to the post office, and including the new postmaster, who, by the way, apparently hasn't yet met with election officials about mail-in ballot concerns. So these are like secretaries of state of a number, like dozens of states that have wanted to meet with him to find out, hey, so like, are you going to let us have an election? And he hasn't met with him yet. He's apparently been busy. But there might be an important event on his calendar in the very near future with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi saying on Sunday that she's calling lawmakers back to session this week to vote on a bill that would bar changes to the U.S. Postal Service amid fears over delayed ballots. Look, that sounds okay. I feel like a lot of the damage has already been done. I don't know. It seems like an oddly, you know, we're looking forward, not looking backwards thing when he's already fired tons of their top officials. They've already cut the funding and all of that. I feel like that little preview of what she's going to do better be just the ground floor if we're to have any hope of repairing the damage before the election.
Yeah, I mean, I am glad she's calling Congress back in session and the House back. I hope they're not flying back and forth a bazillion times and putting themselves at risk, given that we're in a pandemic. It feels just so toothless that the only thing we can do is find out what is actually going on and then not be able to change any of it. It'll be another one of those hearings where every House Republican will be like, this Patriot's family has been dragged through the mud, you know, like, and then the Democrats are like, no, you can't actually remove mail sorters. Don't you understand that that does? And he's like, well, they were old mail sorters and they'd been planning to phase them out for years. Like, this is, we can see it. I will act it out for you as I'm trying to do. But what scares me about this, though, is DeJoy is a former logistics executive. Now, I don't really know what logistics are. I think people in the comments can know better. But from my understanding, it is exactly shipping and receiving and delivery and communications and sorting and all the kinds of things that make business run, right? Logistics are incredibly powerful. They employ a lot of people. And so, out of all the stupid moves, right? Rick Perry, who is the other, who is the former EPA head that I've completely blotted out of my brain?
Oh, yeah, the one with all the scandals about cargo, tactical cargo pants and
yes,
and all
yes,
that.
Yes. Yeah. All of the dumb appointments. This actually seems like an incredibly smart one if you're trying to disrupt and completely
Pruitt.
Undermine. Yes, Pruitt, yeah. Scott Pruitt. If you're trying to the Cabbage Patch baby head, I remember, yeah, which is where I am right now, in the Cabbage Patch.
No, I think you're right, though, that this seems like a particular, like, this is a guided warhead to accomplish, you know, the mission that it has, and that does make it more scary. Like, you know, Ben Carson is the head of HUD to make sure that HUD doesn't get anything done for 4 years. That's what he's there for. But some of these appointments are specifically going in there to try to do so much damage that it accomplishes their goal, but also it makes it as difficult as possible to ever put back together again. And so that's what I think we're seeing with DeJoy right now. And it's devastating. And by the way, it's a reminder that, like, you know, look, so it's looking like we're going to have an election, hopefully, and it's looking like we're going to find out who won at some point. And it's looking like there could be a potentially peaceful transfer of power. So all that's great. Yay. But back before Trump got elected, when some of us were saying simply handing over power to him as some sort of experiment Yeah. Could be dangerous because we don't know if we ever get another chance. And hopefully we will. Maybe we still will. But what's going on in the post office right now is the sort of thing that we were warning about. Because once you give them power, they can do with it what they want. Like you said sort of sarcastically, you can't just remove mail sorting machines. But we gave him the power to choose the person who chooses whether they remove as many as they want. Or yes. Shut down polling places or yes. Change the date or do whatever. That was all what we were warning about. The ability, we were worried about manipulations of the election when Trump had no power to do it personally. Now, he has, God only knows how many different ways that he could do that. We handed that to him with the bet that, we'll probably get it back at some point.
No, it's the bet that because you're president, you will respect the norms. They're not really laws. We don't actually have checks and balances, apparently. These are just norms because we're all respectable people and we all went to Yale or wherever, right? Like, the answer is no. And I can't take one more NPR podcast that's like, can he do that? You know, and all this. It's like, you're absolutely right. He can, he has, and what are we going to do going forward? I don't need all the hearings unless we're going to actually insulate our democracy from any authoritarian doing the same thing. I don't care where they stand politically. Yeah. All right. We need to make sure that there is a citizen review board? Can you not, go forward with any changes to the USPS until these 25 citizens randomly chosen, it's like jury duty, are voting off and signing off on this. And on top of that, I just want to say that we know that, for example, the Federal Elections Commission has been completely divided on partisan lines. And I think that so much of what's going on in this country in what is supposed to be checks and balances has been so utterly polarized and utterly made so partisan that even the things and the protections that we do have are completely hamstrung, which is an absolute argument to have more than two parties. It's an argument to have more citizen oversight. It's an argument to have more bodies that are supposedly like the Supreme Court, which is supposedly nonpartisan. We all know that's BS, but you know what I'm aiming at.
Supposedly the House is going to be back. And one of the reasons they're going to be back is so that DeJoy will testify. Top Democrats just yesterday demanded that Louis DeJoy testify before Congress next week. Why wait a week? And accuse the Trump mega donor of having, quote, acted as an accomplice in the president's campaign to cheat in the election as he launches sweeping new operational changes that degrade delivery standards and delay the mail. Okay, good. And supposedly they're going to have other officials at the Postal Service, assuming there are any other officials at the Postal Service anymore. And then what? Like, we're talking about they wrap up the hearings by the beginning of September. And then what? Maybe they start talking about some potential legislation that Mitch McConnell's just going to vote down or Trump would just veto. What does that accomplish? Like, I get at some point we're saying you have to do something. And so I guess this is what's directly in their power to do. But I don't know anyone who looks at it and says, oh, that'll solve the problem. Yeah, no, I'm very confident about our ability to do mail-in voting after this hearing happens.
Yeah, remember when we had the hearings about ICE and child separation? Mm-hmm. And then, we dissolved ICE and no more children were separated from their parents. They were all reunited. Remember that? Remember that happy story? No. We just find out about the terrible things, which is good. I'm not saying we shouldn't have hearings, but again, they're very toothless. So back to John Lewis. This is someone who one of the last sort of direct actions he took was sitting in Congress over gun control, right? Like, I want to see that kind of action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to show you, I don't know if this is just going to be the House side or if the Senate is going to get involved as well, but one person I do trust to message about this is a person who, when he was talking with Chuck Todd, it was Bernie Sanders, Chuck Todd acknowledged that he's spent a lot of his career trying to protect the Postal Service, including in the presidential election. He made that an issue that he was talking about. But here he is talking about what he sees happening there these days.
Chuck, what you are witnessing is a president of the United States who is doing everything he can to suppress the vote, make it harder for people to engage in mail-in balloting at a time when people will be putting their lives on the line by having to go out to a polling station and vote. So what Trump is saying is we're going to do everything we can And this is not me talking. This is what Trump himself said. Look, I happen to think, as you know, that Trump is a pathological liar. He lies all of the time. But I got to say, I got to admit that the other day he was very honest. He said, look, we want to kill mail-in balloting. We don't want millions and millions of people to be able to cast their ballots through the mail. So we'll destroy the Postal Service. We'll defund it. They can't vote. So this is a deliberate effort to defund and destroy the U.S. Postal Service so that people cannot engage in mail-in ballots. That's not Bernie Sanders talking. That's what Donald Trump is telling the American people. And it is an outrage, Chuck, because this campaign is more than health care. It's more than education. It's more than the Postal Service. It is democracy, and he is sabotaging our democracy.
Yeah, and I think I think he's obviously right. And the thing is, if that is what is happening, and I think that we all agree that that is obviously the intent, whether it'll be successful or not, we don't yet know. It'll be exciting to find out in November, but that's definitely the intent. So if that's the intent, if this is about striking a fatal blow to representative democracy in America, then what is the response? Is the response to have a hearing and to grill him a little bit? And, you know, I'm assuming Lindsey Graham will bring in Diamond and Silk to talk. Like, that's probably what will end up happening. Is that how you save American democracy from this lethal threat? Is that all that you do?
What's really frustrating is that we're seeing some of the same organizations that I think Democrats and elected officials, mostly Democrats, rely on time and time again to get out the vote, to tell us what to do, right? Like, okay, you can still get your early voting mail-in ballot, get it early, get it now. You can hand deliver it to your polling station instead of waiting in line. You know, like, there's all this, a lot of information out there about your particular state and how to apply for a mail-in ballot, where your polling station is, et cetera. But we're not seeing that from Nancy Pelosi. You know what I mean? And I get that that looks kind of sad, that the last thing you have is like, hey, we'll just, you know, find out, get your mail-in ballot early, da-da-da-da. But not really. I mean, you can also volunteer to be a poll worker. Democrats should absolutely be saying, I can register you as a poll worker, okay? And you should, if you've got protective gear, if you've got PPE, if you have, you know, all kinds of face shields and gloves and maybe... I mean, we know it hits everyone in no matter what kind of health they're in. But hey, if you're willing to do that work, that's amazing work. Go work your local polling station.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, got to get more directly involved. And I know that I'll try to very quickly find the details on it. There are, I think it's Move On that's doing a number of actions focused around the post office right now. So definitely that involved. Just follow Jordan Ewell on Twitter and you get all that information. But I really do think, and this is what I said with Brett last Friday, like if we don't have a massive coordinated thing, even that might not do it, because certainly the government has been as resistant as they possibly can to the protests around the country. But we need something massive and undeniable to make sure that we have an actual election that we can trust. Because the thing is, it's not like if there are issues with the election, then it could still go either way. All Trump is hoping for is enough uncertainty, the ability to present that there's some sort of problem, and that only has one outcome. That does not end with Joe Biden winning. No matter how big the gap is, if he can present it as we can't trust the results, he stays in power. That's the goal. It might not be the final outcome, but that is definitely what he is setting up for. And we have to act with the urgency that should be demanded by that realization. And we're certainly not seeing that. Like Nancy Pelosi, she called people back to DC. Yay. They shouldn't have been on recess anyway. It's a pandemic and we have multiple crises already. Even if you were ignoring the post office, how could you possibly take time off? It's for the House as well as the Senate. Yeah. And like for them, they're going to come back and they're going to do a couple of lines. Yay. Like that is not going to save us.
No. Yeah. It's a lot of grandstanding, which at this point I'm very tired of. You know what I don't want to be our first fight when it comes to progressives pushing Joe Biden? I don't want our first fight to be convincing him not to concede.
Oh, God.
Because you know.
Oh, he'd concede.
He would concede. He would concede within 72 hours at the most.
You think it'd go days?
Right? Yeah,
no,
I know.
Gotta be night of. That's a tradition. But, we gotta know night of. Oh, God. I know I'm probably being too hard. I hope that I'm crazy. There is a chance he is up in the popular vote and he concedes. Like, it's not impossible. Let me know. In the chat, say crazy or not crazy. Is that crazy that he would, with a lead, concede on the first night, or not crazy? That's something you worry about. God. Maybe it's crazy. I don't know. I'm probably crazy. I don't know.
I mean, this is the thing, is like, have we learned nothing from, you know, 2000, right? And the election that the Supreme Court swayed when the brother of a presidential candidate was governor of that state in which the Supreme Court swayed it. Like, Republicans have been cheating for years now, okay? They're good at cheating. And Democrats are still trying to play this game of respectability politics. Once again, tweeting out condolences for Trump's brother, who definitely probably died of COVID. Like, you know, all of this is like, for what? What are we trying to preserve anymore? Is there a democracy left? And if we're going to actually save what is left, you're going to need to stop practicing that respectability politics. You're going to need to start fighting and calling things for what it is and doing something about it. Circumvent Congress, talk to the governors, right? Like, make a governor's pact. I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, the results are coming in. It seems pretty split. Crazy, not crazy. Maybe a little bit towards not crazy. But yeah, and this reflects where I think we should be as a nation. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen, but we got a lot of anxiety. You'd think that our well of anxiety would be tapped out at this point, but no, there's more coming. A lot of concern around the country about what the Postmaster General is doing. Is Trump concerned about it? Is he even aware of it? Let's see.
Joy, have your backing for the actions that he's taken in the last several weeks?
Yeah, he's a fantastic man. He wants to make the post office great again. You ever hear the expression? He wants to make the post office great again. The post office is a catastrophe.
Mail sorting machines nationwide, that's one of the things.
I don't know what he's doing. I can only tell you he's a very smart man. He'll be a great postmaster general. And he needs, obviously, if you're going to do these millions of ballots out of nowhere, he's going to obviously need funding. But the Democrats aren't willing to provide other things, and therefore they're not going to get the funding for that. But you are going to have a catastrophic situation with universal mail-in votes. And on top of it, the Democrats aren't willing to give the people the money and the post office the money.
Okay, so that was maddening. And also, like, what do you mean? They don't want to give money to the people in the post office. They've literally been fighting for that postal funding from the beginning. You and your guys said you would veto the CARES Act if it included a bailout of the post office. And they want the one-time payment again and the enhanced unemployment benefits, not even as much as I would want, but it's definitely there. And he lays out, he says that DeJoy wants to be able to take care of the mail-in ballots. I disagree about that. But he says, to do that, they're going to need the money, but they're not going to get the money because I'm not going to give them the money. And it's going to be a disaster because they're not going to have the money. He lays out the entire timeline, the entire plan. And that is seen as, what interpretation is there? That it's just a hard bargaining position for how much he wants to give money to people? That he can say, I'm creating a situation that will result in a disaster that I think is bad, but I'm not going to change. Mm-hmm. And that's the stated, that's not like us trying to read the tea leaves or read between the lines. That is what he said, you know, what cleaned up for English. That is what he said in that video.
Oh my God, look at the Democrats' mess I made.
Exactly. He said that it's his choice.
I mean, really, it's a masterclass in gaslighting. When all this is over and Trump has a, you know, post-presidential career, it will be like Gaslighting 101 with Donald Trump. And it'll be, you know, online
it'll be
classes.
More years of gaslighting. Yeah, and God, he's like, he has his total support, DeJoy. Just total support. So, okay, now we talked about the fact that it would be disaster. Let's go to a little bit more of the video about where he lays out again what he thinks the disaster is going to end up looking like.
We are going to have an election that takes place on a beautiful day, November 3rd. And usually at the end of the evening, they say, Donald Trump has won the election. Donald Trump is your new president. Whatever they say, you know what? You're not going to know this. Possibly, if you really did it right, for months or for years. because these ballots are all going to be lost. They're going to be gone. And just take a look on a smaller basis, but it's great tests. We're doing tests. I mean, these are, you could call them polls, you could call them tests. Look at what's happening all over the country where you have universal mail-in.
But what are you doing?
Wait a minute. The ballots are lost. There's fraud. There's theft. It's happening all over the place. Now, we're going to do it with this whole vast big section of the country. It's crazy.
Okay, so to the video, he says ballots are going to be lost. And the thing is, like, he is going to say that 100 times between now and the election. It's not verifiable that some have been lost. You could claim that 10 have been lost, 100,000 have been lost, a billion have been lost. You could say whatever you want, and he will. So just get ready for that. But that also, if you were to count it correctly, it would take months or years, which is obviously nonsense. We know that. But that he keeps repeating it to set out there for his audience to expect that if it doesn't take months or years, it must then not have been done properly. If it only takes a day or two, then clearly they're missing something. Perhaps all those ballots that have been lost. You see how all of these little elements fit together to mean not that anything will go wrong, but that it will be easy to make the case that something invisible has gone wrong, possibly large enough to swing the election.
Yep. It is brilliant. It is a pretty good strategy, and it's scary because you hear him speak and you're like, this guy is not smart enough to be an authoritarian. And then this strategy, you're like, ooh, this one actually is pretty good, because he wins either way. If there's foul play, it works in his favor and he wins. And if there is not foul play, then he can always claim there is foul play. But this is, again, it's like, oh, voter fraud doesn't exist. People voting three times doesn't exist. That's not real. Your 2016, warning didn't hold up.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that voter fraud isn't an actual thing. Voter suppression is a real thing.
Yeah,
just cheat. Just actually interfere with the mail. I think the best part of that clip was when he says, we might not know the answer for months or years. And you could hear the silence in that press room, just like took the wind out of it, the fear. And I think we're all feeling that fear. And I just want to say, once again, it's on us. It is on us to not only do our part to be able to vote, to help others vote, to actually work polls, but if something goes down, to protest, to take the streets. This is part of our democracy. This is part of our freedom. This is our First Amendment right. Don't you forget it. Like, if we don't exercise it, someone will take it away from us, and they already are. Look at the Black Lives Matter protesters, right? Yeah. But they have had, and everyone around this country have had that fearlessness. We need that same fearlessness in November and on up through it. So, look, this is not the authoritarian. There will be no authoritarian. This is a practice run. This is not it.
Mm-hmm.
F this guy. F his entire administration. Take the streets.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm right there with you. And, when you head out to the streets, let me know and I'll come with you. Is masks, distance. Let's be careful. But yeah. And when you say that, that there's silence in the room, like, think about it. Like, many of the people in that room are probably worried, as a lot of Americans are, that hypothetically, this guy, if we don't do all of what you just laid out, could represent the end of even whatever last vestiges of representative democracy we had, that effectively elections will become, it'll be like a rock in the 90s sort of situation or whatever. Because if he is successful in delegitimizing the election and making it virtually impossible for people to vote, then that's a significant concern. And then, like, they're going through day after day of make the post office great again. Have you heard of it? Like, the idea that, no, this is kind of what strongmen tend to be like, this weird, pathetic, jokey, hacky sort of thing. And so to have to sit through that and try to do a version of your job as if we were in normal times, that's got to wear on you. Really fast, I want to show one more video. So you talked about how voter fraud isn't really a thing. Voter suppression is. Here is their jujitsu for that sort of claim. Here is Mark Meadows being asked a question by Jake Tapper.
Registration, anytime you move, you'll change your driver's license, right. But you don't call up and say, hey,
no,
by the way,
I'm re-registered. There's no evidence of widespread voter fraud, though.
There's no evidence that there's not either. That's the definition of fraud, Jake.
No, you're the definition of a fraud. What are you talking about? There's no evidence that it is. Like, if I were to be like, there's no evidence that lizard men are kidnapping a million Americans a day. Yeah, well, there's no evidence that they're not doing that. No, there is evidence that it's not doing that. That first of all, that'd be a BS argument anyway. But there have been many exhaustive studies about how much voter fraud actually takes place and who does it. Jake Tapper even brings up an example in that of a Republican in North Carolina engaging in limited voter fraud. But it is not some pervasive thing that's swinging millions of votes or changing the outcome of elections. But this is how, like what Mark Meadows just said there, there's not going to be millions of Republicans who see that and think, well, that seems like kind of a weak response. They're going to love it. They're going to think that that is incredibly satisfying. Yeah, you're right. There is no evidence that it isn't happening, a thing that isn't a thing.
Shout out to Donald Rumsfeld, former defense secretary under W during the Iraq War, proving that they're trying to make the case that there were WMDs in Iraq. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Yeah. That's not like how any of it works.
The most 1984 chilling Big Brother statement ever. We've heard it before. Wow. It's somehow always Republicans who love that line.
It is. We talked a few times over the past couple of years about one set of abuses of ICE, abuses that generally happen in detention centers that don't get nearly enough attention. That is pervasive and seemingly allowed sexual assaults that happen in a number of these locations. So we want to talk about a report out of some information from the ACLU, some from ProPublica, who've done a great job of summarizing some of the more recent claims that have been made at certain detention facilities. Guards in an immigrant detention center in El Paso, for instance, sexually assaulted and harassed inmates in a, quote, pattern and practice of abuse, according to a complaint filed by a Texas advocacy group. The allegations maintain that guards systematically assaulted at least three people in a facility overseen by ICE. What they apparently had were areas that they knew cameras were blind to, and so they would lure the same women to those locations to then abuse them where they can't be seen. They would try to intimidate the women, saying that no one will believe you if you say anything, and if you do, we will deport you, or if you behave, we'll help you to be released. So they attempted to psychologically manipulate these women as well. Several guards forcibly kissed and touched the intimate parts of at least one woman. Her attorneys have requested that immigration officials pause her deportation pending a review of the matter because she's supposed to be deported inside of a week. The woman said in a telephone interview that she would rather return to Mexico, even though she's in danger there, because she worries about being targeted in the detention center for speaking up about the abuse. And as we said, they are being told that if they say anything, they will be punished as a result of that. That apparently worked because this woman is willing to be deported back to a place she fears she might be assaulted or murdered in rather than deal with the strike back from these ICE agents.
I mean, a couple things to say. One, this is absolutely in line with Trump's DHS and ICE priorities when it comes to immigration, which is be worse than drug cartels and gangs in Central America and in Mexico. That's what you've got to do. Oh, coyotes and people who are smuggling people across the border are raping women and assaulting them. Be worse than that. Do that so that deterrence will eventually, you know, make an immigrant not want to come to this country, make someone not want to come to this country. So congratulations, because we're now on par with that. We have now the amount of sexual assault rampant in the same gangs that migrants are trying to escape from here in this country, in our own gangs, in ICE. And the second thing is, this is what happens. This is what happens when you dehumanize people. When you dehumanize and you forget about people and they are in detention for months or years, their lives don't matter to you. Their lives are disposable. And it's chilling, and it's not what... Look, erase the idea that crossing the border is illegal. All right, erase that from your brain. Everyone, human beings deserve respect. They deserve to be protected. They deserve to not be assaulted when they are being held against their will already.
Yeah.
Let alone just you know, in life. So, but again, this is what happens in this country when we say that when you've crossed the border, you're suddenly a criminal, then anything goes. Then you can be dehumanized and you can be assaulted systematically. And hey, our gangs will do it.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the respect thing. One of the claims is that one woman says that guards would stand and watch her while she used the bathroom. I guess as an intimidation tactic or whatever. And in terms of how pervasive it is, between 2010 and 2016, about 14,700 complaints alleging sexual and physical abuse were lodged against ICE just in that period. Only a small fraction were ever even investigated by the Office of the Inspector General. I want to give you an example of one particular case. So this is a slightly older one from a couple of years ago. In a May federal court filing in Houston, a Mexican woman said that she was in an ICE facility there back in 2018, where she and two female detainees were moved to an isolated cell. Around midnight, three men wearing facial coverings entered the cell. They raped and beat them. The immigrants were bused to Mexico just hours later, and one of the women says that she discovered she was pregnant from the assault. A spokesperson for the company overseeing that detention center, CoreCivic, who we've talked about quite a bit, denied the allegations, calling them slanderous. Slanderous. And there was one case, ED versus Sharkey, where the detention center claimed that there was no merit to the case because the sexual abuse was consensual.
What?
Between a person being held against their will and one of their guards, that it was consensual. No, there's no respect. There's no acknowledgement of other people's fundamental humanity, you know, and this sort of thing. Look, it certainly seems like it's getting worse under Trump, but it was terrible beforehand. Some agencies, including ICE, and ICE might in fact be the best example of it, are so fundamentally rotten to their core that they cannot be reformed. They would resist, possibly violently, any reform that would be necessary to fix it. It needs to be taken out from the ground, root and stem, and you know, to the extent that any of its functions actually need to be replicated, they can be done by some other organization which won't be tainted by the pervasive racism, misogyny, and sexual and physical abuse.
Yes.
The elections seem to be proceeding week by week with a big gap between Biden and Trump. This thing looked like, you know, voter suppression aside, perhaps it was all wrapped up, but no longer. Over the weekend, a poll came out that shook up everything, or did it? This poll showed that Biden was up in a CNN poll by just 4 points, which is exactly the margin of error. No! What happened to the lead? Now, we're going to add some context to this, but so this is the big poll that came out, Francesca. Did you happen to see it yesterday when it was being released and it was the topic of so much Twitter conversation?
No, I did not. I missed that.
Your life.
I was working on my podcast, The Bituation Room. Great plug. No, I missed this moment of outrage, but I did read the entire poll in preparation for this conversation. Mm. And I was confused.
Yeah? What confused you?
Well, there's a lot of caveats I think you're going to get into. So why don't you start and
sure.
I can add on.
Sure. So, I mean, I would say hypothetically, the details of the individual poll are available, and you can certainly go into that. I would say that I want to add more of a historical contextual caveat to this. So this is a poll. It's CNN. Sure. Totally fine. Let's take a look, though, at our next graphic, where we go back to a number of different polls that they've had. Their poll has jumped around quite a bit over the past few months. From back in April, where Biden was up by 11, then that was cut by more than a half in May, then it jumped up to an even bigger lead in June, and now it's cut back down to just 4 points there. So it seems to be jumping all over the place. Now, that is not to say that this most recent poll isn't an accurate read of what's currently going on. Maybe things have fluctuated that much, seemingly at random back and forth. But you should understand that there are other polls that have been taken place just recently. So if we look at this, this is part of the summary at Real Clear Politics. You can see that the last ABC News poll, which is from the last week, has Biden up by 10. The last CBS News poll, which is from the last week, had Biden up by 10. The last NBC News poll, which is just a little bit older, has him up by 9. And Fox News had him up by 7 back a week and a half ago. And so a lot of people are saying, is this just us getting excited over the most recent potential outlier? And the thing is, after we had locked in today's show, ABC News came out with their most recent poll where Biden has a 12-point lead over Trump. So, and a 10-point among likely voters. So there's your context. Who knows what's going on? There's a lot of polls and they don't all agree.
Yeah. Look, this is the time when someone who's bad at numbers, me, just is happy because, every poll is contradictory. I don't really believe the polls after 2016. I don't think we should put too much into them. But I do think it's important to read the details. And for this one, it was looking, this specific poll only looked at 15 battleground states and looked at 10 of those states were Trump carried in 2016 and only 5 of them Clinton carried in 2016, right? So already it's very like, you know, when the full moon is high and it is a Tuesday in the Virgo season, like it's just very like there's all these caveats, there's all these like qualifiers of these polls. So it's
Jupiter is in the ascendant.
Yeah, Jupiter is in the ascendant. Thus will Biden's shiny crown reveal itself. Like we should remember all of that context. And I mean, what's the point? You know, we should not be complacent. Obviously, it's ridiculous that certain states matter more than others. I thought all states mattered. I really don't know what to make of it other than like, great, some outrage.
Yeah. And what I worry about is, and I've been sort of wondering about this for some time when it's going to kick in, it's that the polls being fairly consistent over the past few months doesn't necessarily mean that this thing is locked down. But the conversation about the election is fairly similar over time. And that might be an accurate reflection of what is actually going to happen. But it isn't exciting for the news. The news wants drama. They want to believe that something big has changed. So now we can analyze the change and figure out what's really going on. They want that. It's more exciting for them personally and theoretically is a better ratings draw. Yeah. And so my worry has been for a long time that like if some sort of Biden scandal comes up, it'll be a huge focus of attention. Is this going to be the thing that shifts everything? Or like if Trump passes a BS executive order that's probably not even legal and barely does anything. Oh, is this going to break through and it's going to change everything? Like it's this desire for there to be change and interest and drama. And maybe this poll is a sign of you know, big things to come, some fundamental shift. But think about over the past month, what huge things have happened that would lead 30 million Americans to change their mind. Does it seem likely that that has happened? I don't know that it necessarily has. So I would say take it with a grain of salt. Understand that you shouldn't be complacent now. You shouldn't have been complacent before. And if you want Trump to lose, then he needs to lose by a lot. A close one probably isn't going to be enough in this thing. So we're going to occasionally check in on the polls because I find them to be at least somewhat interesting. But you got to do everything you got to do, regardless of what the polls actually show.
Agreed. I would just add that when you're saying that that the media wants drama, I think that this expectation that Trump will not accept the results of the election is absolutely part of that media's drama. And just to quote Cardi B from 2016, stop gassing Trump. Stop. Stop basically setting him up to be the authoritarian that he wants to be. The media and anyone asking him a question were like, so what are you going to do if you lose the election? What's next on the bucket list for Donald Trump? Like, wouldn't that be so much more of a normal question than like, so how are you going to cling to power forever and ever and ever? Which is sort of what all of this drama is leading to. You know, if it were just like,
but I'm afraid.
Right. No, of course. But I do think it's important to, yes, be honest about the possibility that he will not concede. But
also to not give him so much leverage and expect him to do that. Rather, again, three-year-old, explain to him that when you lose an election, you have to concede. You no longer president. We take sash, you know? Exactly. Are there sashes?
Okay. I mean, in his history, there has been some. So you know all those videos about Melania snatching her hand away from Donald Trump? Forget about all those. All of those were garbage compared to this one. Take a close look at Trump's last attempt for some sort of human contact in these dark times. Enhance. So there was an initial hold, which was allowed for between 2 and 3 seconds, which, in Melania's defense, is what she agreed to in the initial marriage contract. He tried to get longer, so she snatched away fairly violently. And then you have this attempt where he reaches out and he puts his hand close, and then like he sort of touches her. He tries a little half turn. She's not having it. And does this mean anything? Does this matter? No. But screw him. Screw him. So, Schadenfreude, if that's the only pleasure I can get, then that's what I'll take. Do you think that's the result
of, wife does not want to touch his lizard skin, okay? That there's been enough of that. The evidence is standing right behind them. It's probably like 6'5" at this point. There's been enough contact to produce that child. And now that's all you get. Trump. Mm-hmm. Also, she's holding her purse in that hand, okay? Have some respect. She's trying to hold the railing. It's a steep staircase. She's got her purse.
Those.
She doesn't have time for your hand. And do you think anyone would take your hand on a steep staircase? No.
Yeah. And look, so obviously, the number one reason I play this is because it's funny. Like, come on, let's just agree to that. The number two, though, is... like, at the end of the day, think about everything Donald Trump has tried to accomplish in his life. And also everything he has accomplished. I mean, he may not be the billionaire he says he is, but he has a lot of money. Let's give him that. He may not be a huge business success, but he has some business success. He became president. Nobody respects him. He's a laughingstock and all of that. But that has happened. But at the end of the day, like, his partner has no interest in him.
Yeah.
And I know he probably doesn't even value it that much. He doesn't really seem to consider women to be full humans, so I doubt he's as hurt by that as, like, I would be. If I habitually reached out to my wife's hand and she pulled away for the rest of my life, that would hurt me more than it hurts Trump. But it is still just embarrassing. Like, I'm not going to give spoilers or anything, but I recently watched Breaking Bad, and it's like, if you watch the show, you'll know what I'm talking about. Like, you do all of this... and, like, for what, at the end of the day, if you are alone, so alone at the end of it, what's the point? And how could you not have known that this is what you were producing, thinking about people and speaking about people and acting towards people in the way that you have for literally decades? It is not a good path. It leads to that sort of hand grab. And what I have to imagine, by the way, is all sorts of similar activities that go on behind closed doors.
I mean, look, Michael Cohen's book is going to come out, and of all the grifters who have turned authors, the guy who's currently in prison and who didn't flip on his boss and who was the personal fixer of this president for years and years and years, I'm going to read that book. I'm going to read that book. The guy who lied to Melania's face about where Trump was when he was probably sleeping with Playboy models and or porn stars, like, that, you don't hold that dude's hand, man. You don't hold that guy's hand.
Exactly. And respect to her for not keeping up the pretense. Respect only for that. Literally only that. Remember, she's a birther, so never forget that. And she stays with him. So, but respect for the hand thing. But anyway, Francesca, as always, you make Mondays so much more fantastic. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, John.
Where can people see more of your work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Franny Fio. Listen to the Bituation Room podcast live every Sunday at 6, 9 Eastern. You can find it on all the podcast networks.
It's there. Okay, thank you again. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John. Have a good week.
You too. And a little bit more on the Super Chats. Punchy Paint says, I am 65. I am not stupid. Thank you. 100%. And I don't think that that's what she's saying. Let's see. Charlie Ellis says, we boomers invented the internet. Another pissed off boomer here. Totally understand. I don't think that's what she was saying. Certainly not what I was saying. Let's see. Zane says, oh no, another angry letter from Pelosi. Exactly. I was telling her before the show, there's a Onion headline that's like, Democrats threaten to all wear the same color if Trump doesn't accept election results. It's like, yeah, I guess this is technically better than nothing, but it ain't that much better, and it ain't gonna save us. Okay, Atomic Mime says, regarding Trump and Melania, one of these days she's gonna haul off and hit him with a purse. Absolutely loveless, sad. Yeah, and honestly, like, I'm more concerned about him because he's doing much more actively to harm us. But yeah, sad for both, honestly. How did that work out for everyone involved? How did it work out for your kids? Because they certainly seem sad. Nobody looks at Don Jr. and thinks, that's a guy who's happy in his life. But let's see. Oh, and I'm getting a notice of a must-read tweet. Let's see. Okay. Oh, God. Gabby tweeted at hashtag TDR Live. There are two constants in life. Massachusetts is the best state. And Bart has the most correct taste in movies. How could you? Honestly, how could you? And now I know who told me I had to read that tweet, even though it wasn't labeled. Anyway, everybody, thank you for joining us here on the show. We're going to have live coverage of the DNC later on tonight following the Young Turks. I'll be joining Cenk for that. We're going to have AOC's video we're going to be responding to. So that, at the very least, will be fun. Definitely will see you. Hope to see you for that. And with that, I'm going to go do a little interview. And that'll be posted to the channel, so definitely just check the channel. And we'll see you later on. Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.